super vacation, PRRC state. And we are going to have, and this is a very important presentation, so I want to talk about annual report. That is the heart of the presentation. But anyway, give them this time perspective. I'm not even going to go to Catalonia. Our personality are the same box. We are all like something. So I was not excited from that perspective. But this, our state will cross over to Iraq City.
Honorable members from various political parties that make up the portfolio committee, to our colleagues from state, as well as officials from the department, it is a privilege for the ALRC to table the annual report. At the outset, may I have been greeting from the executive committee of the Education Labor Relations Council to the portfolio committee. As the Education Labor Relations Council, we appreciate the oversight role that is played by the Education Portfolio Committee, in terms of which the theme of our presentation is the location of the ELRC as a player in the skills revolution that our government and our country has identified as a priority, in terms of which as INSA, GIPSA, and various other initiatives call upon us to locate the work we do as public entities with a view to contributing to skills development and thereby the economic upliftment of our people. I thought of the opportunity to quote from the Ministerial Roundtable Conference in Paris, at which, on the internet, it is said that in an era of unprecedented change, we recognize that education systems must respond with innovative and different approaches. It is in this context, Chairperson, we will present our annual report. The annual report is in compliance with the Public Finance Management Act to the extent that all programs have been identified, the objectives which were identified in the 3-year of the strategic and operational plan are enumerated, and whether we have achieved those or not is highlighted. So that's for ease of reference. Secondly, the annual report is color-coded, in which the core business and the various other sections that are required by the CSMA are clearly identified, and accordingly, our PowerPoint presentation is also color-coded to match that of the annual report. In this respect, I will take us through the introduction. The Education Labor Relations Council primarily exists to promote and achieve labor peace in education by getting the two key stakeholders, government and the trade union, to work together with a common purpose of achieving transformation in public education and contributing to development, both socio-economic. Our mission as an organization is to be the best in providing quality, effective and efficient services based on a non-partisan administration and providing facilitative mechanisms to address issues that confront education. A corporate culture that exists is based on Marco Pere, in which we value the people we serve and those for whom we work. They are primarily the teachers of our country. We commit ourselves to be fair and ethical, providing services in which people can trust,
for them as well, not for a faith free. We're following this statement.
Faith
free of our number. And for the faith free, we're not a mission now. Thank you, sir.
And accountable to the extent that we make our presentation to the portfolio committee and to anyone who may require to be accountable. They are customer service oriented organization working together, striving for excellence, promoting communication, encouraging innovation, and developing a commitment to serving educators and public education. Primary activities of the council, is to promote labor peace through the provision of dispute resolution and prevention services. The secondary business is to provide an independent and facilitating forum for the conclusion of consultations and negotiations between the state and the employee through the trade union. These two primary services that defines our very existence. In reporting to you on negotiating support services, I thought I'd make the following comment. At our annual general meeting held in July and August of this year, we had a frank and open discussion to the extent we acknowledge that we have not achieved much of what we set out to achieve. And therefore, when you look at the objectives we identified and the results, you will find that our performance has dropped significantly. It is a matter in which the parties to the ELRC, both the state and the trade union, will address in the course of this financial year. In evaluating our negotiation support services, we also identified that the way in which we provide services in the provinces, which Parliament itself has identified through the portfolio committee, the one in which resources should be used prudently and where possible shared, so as to share the burden of those costs with other organizations that may want to share such facilities. Equally, it would mean a significant revision to the way in which we provide negotiation, consultation, and support services in the province. The matter that arose when we were seeking our levy increase. You'll find that at the national level, we have conducted research around page 5, on maximum hours of work for educators, facilitated and monitored the implementation of the integrated quality management system for educators. We involved ourselves in the further education and training colleges sector when the bill was mooted in 2006, and finally an act was achieved in Parliament on the 12th of December 2006, when the President signed the Further Education and Training Colleges Act No. 16 of 2006. And that we will come back to under the last part of our report. In the sector of provinces, of significance, I'll take you to page 6, to KwaZulu-Natal. I happen to participate both with the member of the Executive Council for Education, Ms. Ina Kamir, as well as with the Head of Education, Dr. Sassi Lubis, in their consultation around the creation and distribution of educator posts. To the extent that Collective Agreement No. 2 sets the precedent in which consultations have resulted in a collective agreement that defines the creation and distribution of educator posts. Collective Agreement No. 2 is therefore a watershed agreement that sets the pace and tone and is a model to other provinces in the country. address the issue of temporary educators to collective agreement number one, which has been an issue that has plagued education in many of the provinces, in the case in particular, led to significant disruption. Equally, they signed five collective agreements. They were the most productive of all the bargaining chambers, including the national. In total, they had 121 meetings of either consultations or negotiations. And to that extent, you'll find that the high degree of labor peace was during the term and high degree of productivity addressing the issues that confront both the Department of Education and for the military and the teachers. The other highlights are clearly there. At least most provincial chambers concluded one collective agreement. So when we look at page 7 at the bottom, we look at the financial effect. For the financial year, we do a comparison between the national negotiations and the provincial negotiations. You will find on the right 2006-2007 that the provinces achieved more in terms of collective agreements concluded than the national. It is in that context that we have a significant revision to how we will conduct our own negotiations at the national level. The year under review, also we achieved significantly in matters related to negotiation. The first thing, we undertook an international comparative research through study tours, and NHA of the annual report to IPM has an executive summary and a full report is published in this respect. Of note is our visit to the 15 countries in the world, and I think our significance should be the way in which the Mexican government and the people of Mexico address issues of providing public education. Through Conapi, they have a system of using solar energy and satellite technology of taking education to the people in deep, remote areas. Through INOVA, the Institute for Innovation and Evaluation in Education, is just an example of how a body established independently can promote innovation amongst educators and manage performance management systems independently of the department. So those are two of the highlights to look at in terms of the international comparative research. We also participated in the International Industrial Relations Association 14th World Congress in Peru, and that report is contained in NHA. The emerging development in the International Industrial Relations Association is a significant focus on public sector employees or industrial relations or labor relations. Equally, we responded to the request of our minister, the Honorable Nalin Pando, in a city where South Africa was the host of the 16th Conference of Commonwealth Education Ministers. And we also, in the second same venue and place, conducted an international seminar arising out of our international research report, contributing towards change and transformation in public education in South Africa. We invited speakers from Jamaica, Cuba, Mexico, and India to assist us in this respect. Our invited guest from New Zealand, unfortunately, was not able to participate. So that concludes our report on the negotiation part. And I'll take you through to page 9, we look at the number of disputes referred. For the period under review, there's a significant drop in the number of dispute adjudicators are declaring, from 651 of the previous year to 589. And if we look at that, the slide at the bottom, our settlement rate of conciliation is 101 out of 589. That's an area we would need to work on. We have 169 arbitration awards being issued. We had a further 59 cases in separate arbitration, that means there was no need to get an arbitration award. So that increases the settlement to 158. 101 plus 57. 143 cases of disputes were still being processed. The rest were either withdrawn or not proceeded with or removed due to the lack of jurisdiction. In this respect, we need to try and achieve a settlement rate of conciliation of 50% as our next target. If we look at the areas around which educators declare disputes, the largest area is around promotions and appointments in public education. Dismissals contributes to 16%, 94 specific cases were there. Benefits was 73.12%. Interpretation and application were 18.3%, and others would be other unfair labor practices. So that's on page 10. On page 11, we do the breakdown of the province. Of significance is the Western Cape. The Western Cape, which had a low number of disputes declared, you will find over the last 2 years, is increasing in number and percentage to the extent it is likely to overtake KwaZulu-Natal as the province in which the largest number of disputes are being declared. At the bottom of page 11 is the number of awards that have been taken on review. This is for a 2 year period. For the 2 years, the last 2 financial years, the total number of 121 ELRC awards were taken on review. Of significance is individuals who abandoned their union, approached individual lawyers. 70 were taken on review, that is 57%. Trade unions themselves have only taken 14 on review, that's 12%. The Department of Education took 37. And of significance there, if I take it to the next page, you will realize that the highest percentage is the Free State. The Free State, in which 25% of all disputes arbitration awards are taken on review. And the highest percentage is by the Department of Education. Now, the review issue, it has significant cost implications for us. Every time a matter is taken on review to the labor court, if it is set aside, it means the matter must be re-aired. So that's one of the ones. The other is that our administrative cost in providing support to the labor court in the form of transport of the arbitration proceeding is a very significant one. Just later due to the high cost of labor cost funds. This issue means that we would have to increase legitimacy of our arbitration process and to improve the quality of our arbitration award. And to that extent, we've established a quality control panel to review arbitration awards before they are issued. And a certificate of perusal is given to arbitrators to attend to matters. In that way, we hope not to minimize the number of arbitration awards taken on. In terms of page 13, program 4, I'll ask the CFO to say.
Thank you, Professor. Honorable members of parliament, for your committee colleagues. I'm going to focus mainly, firstly, on the audit report. unfortunately have this question. And I'll take you through that and also indicate actions, corrective actions, which have been taken so far. If I look at the position of the ELRC at the end of March 2007, we look at our asset situation and where we have to focus was on the current ratio, that is the solvency of the ELRC in terms of its ability to meet its liability. And in comparison with the previous year, there has been a slight decrease in terms of the current ratio from 2 to 1 to 1.6 to 1. And we look at liquidity, that is the ability of creditors to pay our liabilities. It has also slightly decreased from 2 to 1 to 1.5 to 1. And I think that's mainly because of the deficit which we have been incurring over the past number of years, whereby we have to dig into our reserve in order to supplement our income to meet our commitment in order for the ERC to deliver in terms of its objectives. However, I must indicate maybe at this stage that for the following current following financial year, which is the present current financial year from 2007 to 2008, the situation will improve significantly because an agreement has been reached between the parties in council for the increase in the levy. So I think we don't have to, in future, dig into our reserves in order to meet our commitment. In terms of the liabilities, the most significant one is trade and other payables, which mainly relate to accruals that we had at the end of the year, and also an intercompany liability that we owe to the transformation fund, which I'll get later on. In terms of our financial performance on page 15, we have indicated the trend over the past 3 years, starting from 2005 to 2007. The main income of the council, which are levies, has been, in fact, I think, flat if you look at it. And we hope that with the increase that we have secured, which has come into effect from August 2007, we will be able to increase our income by 300% in order to meet our commitment of delivery. If you look at the expenditure, I think the main one that's been highlighted there is the arbitration and the mediation. We have been able to contain the cost in relation to the previous year. But I think it has been indicated earlier on that we are battling with increasing costs relating to labor cost reviews of awards that have been taken. And the cost thereof is not included in arbitration and mediation. It has been indicated separately under other arbitration and operational expenses, which of course have also been contained in terms of comparison to the previous two financial years. And in the end, we managed to contain also our net deficit as indicated of 7.3 compared with 7.2 of the previous year. So those deficits starting from 2005 really eaten a lot into our reserve. If you look at it, it's more than 70 million rand, which we have been digging into our reserves. But I think we still have a little bit which has to cover other unforeseen expenditures that might come in the future. If you
go to the last part of that page 15, it relates to transformation fund. That's basically where all our projects are being funded from. And there has been an increase in terms of delivery relating to 2006. 10 million rand, 10 and a half million rand were spent in the previous financial year as compared to the current year under review, where 9.7 million have been spent. And that has mostly been spent on the narrative section, which the General Secretary has already alluded to. The TCMA training, which is still continuing up to the end of this financial year. Mine was also spent on the CCEM and the ELRC seminar, which was held in December of 2006. International study visits, and also the International Industrial Relations conferences which we attended. Basically, the transformation plan will be coming, hopefully, to the end by the end of this financial year. The only area where we might still have some liabilities to meet is in relation to the National Professional Diploma in Education, where some of the institutions still have to prove the liability that they would like us to meet in terms of the educators which have been trained at those institutions. So it's either we will make those commitments, we will make provision for that, and otherwise I think the transformation fund will in the end come to an end at the end of this financial. Now, I would like maybe now to focus on the report of the Auditor General, which relates to a qualification, to material weaknesses, and also to the area of parameters which they have raised. Our qualification relates to non-compliance. And that non-compliance, maybe that's to assist you with audit report in terms of the annual report is on page 115. It starts from 115. And there are three areas that we need to clarify in terms of the qualified opinion, which is on page 117, other methods and other reporting responsibilities. Non-compliance with international accounting standards, IAS 39, became effective from financial years ending on or after January 2005. We as a council, we were not made aware of the accounting standard. It was only indicated to us at the end of the audit for the 2006-2007 financial year. We could have made the necessary changes, but due to capacity constraints on the side of the Auditor General, they could not have time to audit the calculations that needed to be done. And the AG has indicated that it would be looked at in the following financial year. But however, we have in the meantime taken corrective action in terms of addressing the compliance with the standard. What it really means is there are certain payables that we did not discount. That is, for all the liabilities that we have shown in our balance sheet, what the statement requires is for us to discount future commitments in terms of those payables and come up with the present value, which would affect the liability as such, which would also affect the reserves from the previous year and will also affect the expenditure. But in the end, when the actual payment is going to be made, the figures which have been indicated in the financial statement are the actual figures that are going to be made. So it doesn't really affect the validity of the balance sheet. It doesn't affect the validity of the performance in terms of income and expenditure. However, it is a requirement in terms of the international standard that needs to be complied with. And correctly taken, action that has been taken is the officers in the financial department are going to be put through training in November. A date has already been scheduled for the 6th of November for training to take place on the job relating to the actual transaction that affects the council. And later on in the month, I think around about the 15th, then there is a new standard which we have been made aware, which comes into effect during the 2007-2008 financial year, and attendance of staff has been scheduled for that date. So hopefully by the end of this financial year, all the concerns that have been raised would have been attended to through training of the financial staff. Now I go to the second area of concern which has been raised by the Auditor General, which is material weaknesses. Material weaknesses which were found to be lacking was mainly relating to fixed assets. And it was mostly of lack of evidence of any work that has been done in relation to fixed assets. The first one was evidence of physical count of fixed assets, which has been made. Basically, I think we all understand what stock taking is all about. Fixed assets stock needs to be done physically on a planned basis, and unfortunately, no evidence of that was kept for audit purposes. Although the fixed asset count were done, but we could not satisfy the auditors in terms of physical evidence available to support. So a guideline has been issued so that any of that evidence, which initially or beforehand was never taken seriously as part of evidence that needs to be kept, is going to be kept. And in fact, a fixed asset count has already been started in most of the provinces. I think at the moment, 6 of the provinces have been done out of 9. And I think that area is also going to be addressed by the end of this financial year. The other material weakness relating to fixed assets related to the monitoring of fixed assets. I think it's mostly to do with fixed assets that can be moved around, like laptops, whereby if a laptop has been taken out of the office, there is no record. If a count or a check is being done while the asset is out of the office, where it shows that the asset has been moved out of the office, probably maybe to the provincial office, with the official that might be visiting those offices. So we have put in place a process where all fixed assets, specifically relating to those which are vulnerable, like laptops, where movement has to be monitored, and including the security check, there is no fixed asset which is going to be leaving the premises without the security check and recording thereof being done. The last one was on the issue of barcoding of the fixed assets for purposes of identification, and that at the moment is nearing completion. I would say 90% of it has been done. The other material weakness related to policies and procedures. We do have a finance policy and procedure. What they really related to was more an in-depth clarification or explanation of individual processes that needs to be put in place in order to guide the finance staff to do their work and understand their work properly. For example, the issue of depreciation. In terms of the new requirements of having to revalue assets in terms of their lifespan, which changes almost every year, you have to do a revaluation of your assets on a yearly basis. That affects the way depreciation needs to be calculated. So there isn't a proper written guidance on to guide the staff on how to do depreciation through the year before actually revaluing the assets at the end of the financial year. That has now been put in place so that each and every staff member in finance understands what they need to do. We didn't have a disaster recovery plan in place, although we had it, but it was not in writing. That is, areas like having to do a backup on a weekly basis, on a daily basis, and on a monthly basis, the securing of the disaster recovery plan in terms of securing the equipment out of the premises were not being looked at. In fact, at the moment, the disaster recovery plan has been put in place. There was no HR plan in terms of our planning. We didn't consider it important to document it, but now the HR plan has been put in place. I think those are the areas of concern relating to material weaknesses that I can point out to the committee at the moment. The last one is other reporting responsibilities which relate to the performance in terms of the strategic plan which was approved by the executive authority. What really happened was that during the financial year there have been areas which became important to be addressed by the parties to council which were not in their strategic objectives as submitted for budget and strategic planning purposes and which had to be attended to as a matter of urgency. And therefore, the Auditor General, really what he is pointing out, I would say, is more of a positive comment in terms of having achieved other objectives which were not budgeted for and put in the strategic plan at the time of submitting the 3-year strategic plan. I think those are the areas that I wanted to bring clarification to this committee, and that I think will bring my presentation to the end, and I'll hand back to the General Secretary to finish the last part of the presentation. Thank you.
Thanks, Ed. We've crossed over, but keep in mind my time constraints. I'm going for 1:45, which is 1 hour to 1:45 when we, if you could keep that in mind.
Thanks, Chairman.
So my page takes long. Say, in program 5, as the requirement of PSMA reporting, the program 5 in the annual report contains all the elements that are required to be reported on. I'm just focusing on one area, and that is the COD development, an issue that arises from the assessment report last year. Whilst we had a significant lack of funds, we still managed to prioritize some investment in COD development to the extent that management were put on management advance program. Support staff were put on programs to enhance their specific skills related to their various functions. Of importance is we've now established a computer literacy center for other staff in which computers have been installed, access to internet and email, as well as training to staff at a very low level. This is to assist in providing a broader base and getting all staff computer literate and having access to electronic facilities. The last part is to look at where we're going to. The first is, I said at the beginning, we look at the Further Education and Training Colleges Act of 2006. Having been passed in December, the task that was mandated to the ERC was to facilitate its implementation. And that implementation resulted in two collective agreements, number 4 and 5 of 2006, which envisages the transfer of lecturers from the state
to the college. In this respect, Section 197 of the Labor Relations Act is of importance. Collective Agreement Number 5 encapsulates the requirements of Section 197 of the Labor Relations Act, and to that extent, the Education Labor Relations Council has been significantly involved in the transfer of lecturing staff from the state to the district colleges. That process is to have the target date of 1st January 2008. We are currently in the process of changing the ELRC forever. A bargaining unit for the FECC sector is being created on the 2nd and 3rd of November, that's the coming Friday and Saturday. The employers' organization for the FECC sector is being established so that it will play its role in facilitating transformation in the further education and training college sector. It is in that context I located my quotation at the beginning of this meeting. The second area is that the ERRC and the Educator Trade Union, namely the South African Democratic Teachers Union, the National Professional Teachers Organization of South Africa, the National Teachers Union, NATU, and the South Africana under the Labour Union, have approached and secured 60 million, in excess of 60 million over 5 years, to conduct a program of prevention, care, treatment, and access in relation to HIV and AIDS amongst educators. This program will be managed by the ERRC and the General Secretary, in particular with the Educator Union. This is a project which used to be undertaken by the unions on their own in the past. Now it is a concerted effort under the auspices of the ERRC to undertake this, to address a problem we have identified in the research we are undertaking with the Human Sciences Research Council in the period 2003-2004, which resulted in a research report called The Health of Our Educators, where it was identified that approximately 13% of educators were infected with HIV and AIDS or related, and 16% of educators were in African communities, and the highest percentage was among female educators. So this program gives a practical attention to addressing HIV and AIDS among educators. The creation of the further education training bargaining unit in itself changes the way in which the council is constituted and organized to deliver its service. In future, we would have two bargaining units, one for general public education and a specific sector for the further education and training college sector. So the year 2008, from 1st of January 2008, we expect the activity in the ERRC related to this FEC sector bargaining unit to be very intense. Our current strategic and operational plan will have to be revised to accommodate the new work that will emanate from this. The PCTA program in itself is that the ERRC would provide resources and accommodate the personnel that is visited to deliver this program amongst the educators. While primarily driven by the Educator Union, it is the responsibility of the General Secretary to ensure the Departments of Education, both nationally and provincially, cooperate to the extent that this program is able to succeed. This program brings together various other role players like the Human Sciences Research Council, the Medical Research Council, the American Education Development Institute, and others. And to that extent, the ERRC is located, the work that is done, to contributing to both transformation that we need in our country as well as development. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I want to propose and also help answer any questions. If I allow my members to ask questions, you don't do that for an hour. So I want to propose that to cross over the stage, they make their presentation, hopefully that is around 50 or something minutes. And then at the end, if you have a question, we'll go back to what you have. Are we here to help people? So my numbers are saying to that?
Yes.
I suppose that we cross over the stage for the presentation and then we come for questions there.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning to honorable members and colleagues. I'll hand over to the chairperson of the Council, Celestial Council for Educators, Mrs. Santhia Ceraceto. She'll make some opening remarks, and then after those remarks, I will make half the presentation and the CFO will make the other half. Thank you.
Good morning, Professor and honorable members. This morning our delegation has two of our paid officials, our CEO and the Chief Financial Officer. They will do the details of the presentation. And then we have three members of our executive. We have the Deputy Chair, Professor Deer, and then the Chairperson of our Professional Development Portfolio, Mr. T.B. DePullo. So we've come along to present to you today. I'm very pleased to be able to say this is the last review when I will say we've suffered from financial constraints. The majority of the year we were still suffering from the low levy, but from April of this year the levy was increased and we have subsequently been able to accelerate delivery of our objectives. So I'm pleased to report that substantial progress has been made in the latter part. We have certain highlights, and one was referred to by the ELRC, and that was the participation in the Commonwealth Conference hosted by our Minister of Education. And SAFE presented there, our two members of our council gave papers and the teachers gathering, and our office assisted with organization. Then we have eagerly embraced the framework on teacher education and development, which has tasked SAFE with the continuing professional development point. We have been working extremely actively in developing the framework for that particular delivery. And we are very excited about that and how it will develop the teachers. In very recent days, we had a significant outreach to teachers in Limpopo. As a celebration of World Teachers Day, SAFE traveled the length and breadth of Limpopo and visited about 50% of schools in Limpopo and gave them information about the organization. And it was very enlightening for those teachers and also for the organization to see the need that was there and to be able to meet some of that need. We are also, as an organization, re-looking at the organogram and making sure that our job descriptions and the functions have been correctly structured, because with the CPD points that will now become our duty, we need to make sure that that salary structure and that staffing structure fits within the entire organogram of the organization. We've had our challenges, which continue to be registration, both on South African educators, but even more so the flood of foreign educators, which have become quite a burden on the organization. And the fact that there is no penalty in legislation for non-registration would appear to be a stumbling block, because teachers have to register and schools have to have registered employees, but if they don't, there's not much recourse at the moment, so that's something that we will have to look at. We are also promoting professionalism and professional ethics, and that continues to be a very important job of ours, making everyone aware of what the code implies. The strike action earlier this year put that intention with professionalism, in the sense that there were some educators who did not know where their right to strike and behave in terms of that, in fact, conflicted possibly with some professional aspects in their conduct when they were on strike. And that remains something the state needs to promote and educate teachers. And there is a continuing tension because we need to promote the profession, but we do have problems when either the media or teachers themselves do things that damage the profession. And of course we would like the support of our government in the sense that the salaries, the occupational specific dispensation matches the professional needs of educators. So council is faced with a number of challenges which it faces with perseverance and will continue to do so. That's briefly some of the highlights and challenges. More details will be given.
Thank you, Chair. Professor, we will present the report in the following way. I'll make comments speaking to this document that we have passed around, and then the CFO will take us and highlight some aspects of the strategic plans and the outputs there, and some comments regarding our financial statements. Mindful of the time, Chair, I will not dwell too much on many of the pages. The first page reminds us of our mandate, and our mandate is threefold. One pertains to registration, the other to professional development of all educators, and third is the upholding of the ethics in the profession. In a nutshell, it is to ensure professional standards amongst our teachers. The operations of SAFE are governed by our Council of Secretary Persons, and up to this day we have not filled in the position for the Counselor for Further Education and Training, and we have made a number of attempts, but if honourable members would be able to assist SAFE in securing someone to fill in that seat, we would appreciate that assistance. Council, as everyone knows, is the key decision-making body. They, in the main, determine the policy, which the executive committee supervises the implementation of via the CEO and his staff. The offices presently are located in Centurion, Swane, and I have something to say about that just now. In terms of registration, we have registered on the next page, and I'm sorry for the poor quality of this, we have registered almost 23,000 educators in the year that is gone. About 5,000 of those have been registered provisionally. Our total registration stands approximately at 500,000 educators. And interestingly, we have about 1,000 foreign educators in our books, and a large number of them happen to be from Zimbabwe in particular. The challenges facing us in this section, and the chairperson alluded to the fact that we've had a difficult year financially, are quite a few. One is that it has been very difficult to get through to SAFE offices. And that is because we have not developed our call center or help center to the level that we need to respond to our educators. That is a matter that we are attending to in this financial year, and I'm sure we will go a long way ensuring that our people would be able to contact us. The other is that our premises, which we occupy through the good graces of the ELRC, have become too small for SAFE, and I will have something to say about that. The challenge of unregistered educators, as the Chair has mentioned, is one that is staring us in the face, and we will have to undertake special assignments to make sure that we research and audit, find out exactly where all these unregistered registered educators are, and to make serious plans to register that is something that we want to address in the current year. Then also our challenge here is to broaden the scope of FAPE to cover all other kinds of educators in the FET colleges, to relook at standards of entry and registration for them, teacher assistants, interns. So the council this year will have to finalize policy regarding these matters. Already, I'm sorry, sir, I'm on the state registration. But what has happened is the challenges that have got cut off. That is why you can't find
it. I can't find it.
Not there. I was hoping you don't notice that. Yes. And then we are trying, as I said, to broaden the scope of states to cover all of these other categories. For example, we always are confronted with this question about coaches and other personnel that come to school and interact with the learners, so that we want our learners to be safeguarded against all learning facilitators. Now, the Act doesn't go that far, so we want to engage this year and maybe make some recommendations, even in terms of amendment of that Act. And the other question that has already been raised is the question of foreign educators. We are trying very hard to find the right mix in terms of policy to facilitate foreigners entering this country to teach, because we are well aware of the shortage of teachers in particular areas and also in learning areas. But then also the dilemma is that we don't want a situation where we give foreigners so easy access that South African teachers with South African qualifications do not get jobs. So it is a matter that we have to unravel with all of the sensitivities that are involved. And it is one that states will have to pronounce policy on this year. In terms of professional development, Chair, this is our main sort of pillar for SAFE, for SAFE's reason to exist, is to make sure that all our teachers grow professionally. And we have done quite a bit, as you will see on that page. But the most important achievement so far has been, one, the promotion of what we call the professional development portfolio. We are encouraging and we want to make it a culture that all our teachers have a portfolio that reflects on their own growth in the profession. And it is an idea and a concept that is very well received, and the teacher unions have actually invited us, the departments have invited us to have workshops to promote that idea. So there is large consensus that teachers need to record and reflect over their own growth. And the greatest achievement here has been the question of the continuing professional teacher development. Now here, SAFE has been given the mandate to manage and implement continuing professional teacher development for all educators in this country. And it is something that the council is extremely excited about. And I will have something to say about that in a minute. There are challenges, of course. And we are now taking seriously this question that has been raised consistently by the committee, our question of our visibility and our outreach, the question of going out to the teachers. We are taking that very seriously. In the last financial year, we didn't do much in that regard, but I think as the good professor observed, this year you would see faces visible. We went out to Limpopo in October, early October, trying not only to appreciate the good work that is being done by the large majority of our teachers, but also to give them information. And I must say it has been a very rewarding and exciting experience for the council, because teachers out there appreciate being appreciated. And I think there is a lot to be gained. And we have made a serious omission, and I must declare to this committee, in that we have forgotten to invite the portfolio committee members to join us. We will do that at the next opportunity, because I think you will really have a wonderful experience going to the schools, especially in the outlying areas in the township. And I think our spirit of patriotism would be reignited by the sincerity and the passion that is out over there, in spite of the difficulties that many of our communities battle to learn in. So we will make up for that. And we have many such campaigns and programs throughout the year, not only in Canada. So there are some challenges here, and we are overcoming them in terms of regular publication, having a wider rollout of the portfolio. In terms of the CPTD, I am jumping two pages, I think, because I think the statement also went wrong. You would see a heading called CPTD. Now, this is a very long story, and I don't think we have time for me to get you into the story. I would rather maybe answer, or the team would answer, some pointed questions. But this is a concept that is based on a very simple national demise. That is, educators need to be exemplars of lifelong learning, so that we can then create a learning nation. And council has the mandate to watch over this. Of course, there are technicalities in terms of how this would be managed by state. It has been a long battle of about 4 years in the making of that policy, and there has been great consensus share that has been reached on all of the fundamental principles. For example, it is agreed that all teachers now would accumulate a certain number of points over a period, about a three-year period. It has been agreed that there will be different categories of what we call professional development activities. It's not just a question of chasing paper and getting paper qualifications, but making sure that real professional growth takes place. Very interestingly, professionalism in the council is not just seen as getting and accumulating academic qualifications. Professionalism embraces activities that involve improvement of the socio-economic conditions of our learners. If we find, for example, that learners are involved, teachers are involved in nutrition programs, or they would be involved in programs that enrich the community in some way or the other, on health programs, we would regard that as professional, and we would want to recognize them and reward them with professional development points. So the whole way in which a professional is seen in South Africa would include what we regarded as a professional in the past, but of course would be far wider, so that we encourage teachers to kind of respond to the present context and the present realities of South Africa. We must also use this opportunity to express gratitude to the ministry, because the ministry has selflessly agreed, and we are very quick to criticize the ministry, and maybe that is something that needs to be done from time to time, but we are reluctant to acknowledge. The ministry has agreed unreservedly to fund the full management and implementation of the CPTD. It has already allocated budgets to us for the planning phase. This year and next year would be the planning phase. So they have directed resources to us so that the teachers' levy money would not be used for CPTD activities. The minister has given us an assurance, unqualified assurance, that once the CPTD plan rolls out, in all probability in 2009, say there would be an arrangement in which states would be able to get funding, so that that about 700 million rand that is always available for teacher development would now be channeled in a very organized and relevant way. That has been the problem with teacher development in the past. It has been taking place, but the critique has been that it has not been organized, it has not been relevant. So we want to probably sort of acknowledge that. Continuing professional teacher development. It's the National Framework for Teacher Education and Development, sir, has two parts to it. One is called IPET, which is Initial Professional Education and Training, IPET, I-P-E-T, and the other one is CPTD. Although SAFE has a lot of influence and interest in IPET, SAFE's role has been to focus more now on CPTD in terms of that policy. there are other ways in which I said these things, also in school. So there are challenges, of course, like there will always be, but this would not distract us. They fight us. The council has never been negative about any of these things. The question about making sure the teachers actually find the time to improve themselves, to make sure that teachers would be in a position to access professional development activities and programs, the affordability of it. The whole system is designed in such a way that teachers would not have to go beyond the 80 hours that has been agreed to in the ERRC. It is designed in a way that teachers will not have to pay if they want to, so that they would be able to accumulate the points in the natural course of their work. Of course, teachers would be invited to go beyond that and embrace activities that they would have to pay for, go take a little more of their time. So there is also this little question that we are trying to overcome. In what way do we link this up to the IQMS of the department? Because we don't want, say, and the unions are behind us, to work in kind of contradiction or in competition with the kind of a department effort that also is trying to develop educators. So we think there could be good alignment and complementing of the effort. We also want to say that this structure, the system of CPTD chair, is not a threat. It's not another bullying tactic, because our teachers, I think, have been under pressure for too long. The way in which we are approaching this, the council approaches CPTD, is that we are saying to teachers, you have been developing yourselves all along. Now, this is the organized way in which the council said you should develop yourself. And we want to make this a kind of self-rewarding, self-punitive scheme, so that those that accomplish the goals, at least within the first two cycles, would be able to demonstrate this achievement to people who would want to promote them and for other career purposes. Those, of course, who may not do this for some reason or the other, will, of course, be punishing themselves. I must also declare, Chair, before I come to the end of my part of it, is that it is quite noteworthy that there hasn't been any significant resistance to the whole concept of continuing professional teacher development, but that may be an oversimplification, because there are lots of areas that teachers still want clarification on. When we go out to teachers, what we say to teachers, and I'm hoping we get your support as well, is that we want to make this an exciting adventure for your growth. We will only embark on that journey when you are ready, so that the teachers do not see this now as another imposition that comes and adds to all of the complications vis-a-vis the IQ and the requirements and so on. So we want to make sure that all of this is streamlined. Chair, the last part of my report, but one, deals with the cases that we have dealt with, and the notes that I have made on this page that I call ethics, it's the one that I skipped. It was just in the wrong order. Are a little disappointing, and I must point out the disappointment to you. In the last year, we received 321 complaints, and I am sorry to announce that we've only had 9 investigations and 4 hearings. And the chairperson at the outset said that last year we had financial difficulties. It was not only financial difficulties. For some reason, personnel that work in this section, Chair, are flexed away from us very quickly. It's like a stepping stone in their career. So we have had a very quick turnover of key personnel, managers and assistant managers in the section. And it takes some time for the new incumbents to get on board. So we fell behind. And also we did not have too many structural meetings because of the financial problems that we were having. But all of that is now taken care of. We have that section under excellent management and fully staffed. And the backlog is being cleared out. So that was a bit of a low point in terms of that section of our work. Altogether, in this section, just a summary, because there is a lot that's said about, and I say this every year, I think, when I come to Cape Town, about futures being a lot that misbehaves and gets into trouble. But in terms of our record, we've had less than 1,000 complaints since the year 2000. It's something for us to think about. And of that, there may have been just about 250 cases that we dealt with, where I think of just over about 110 actually were sanctioned, either by striking off or by some other way. So in terms of our staff, one can say that our teachers are quite responsible in the way they carry out the task. There are others, of course, that argue that maybe there are phenomenon and community patterns that don't allow reporting, but we want to investigate that, and we would begin doing that this year to be seen if this indeed is the reality out there. There are a number of challenges here again, and just to mention that we are updating our handbook on this business, because the council has said, unfortunately we have Professor Gia here, besides being the deputy chair of council, the law requires that she chairs the disciplinary committee, and the first thing that she did when she took over the position is she renamed it the ethics committee, because she said our job must be, and we have learned from that, to improve a lot of our teachers, to teach them the ethics, rather than to, in the first place, just think of punishing educators. So we have taken that, and we may make an amendment in due course in terms of the law. Here again, our outreach and our advocacy is something we're concentrating on this year, training of panelists, and making sure that we are on top of this in a very proactive way. There also has some work to be done in terms of cases colliding with each other. Cases go to the court, they go to the department, they come to us. Cases also go to the ministry. But fortunately, the ministry refers them back to us. So we have to do some streamlining, and I think we need to have some bilaterals with the department to check, you know, if we cannot clean this up, but to be seeing what kind of cases you would deal with and what kind of cases they need to deal with, so there isn't this kind of overkill that sometimes seems to happen, or worse still, sometimes one party thinks the other will do it and nothing gets done. Say, lastly, from my side, the chief financial officer will talk about the strategic plan very quickly, Morris, and highlight some of the areas of the finance. The question of the premises. Last year, we have said to the portfolio committee that we were occupying the premises of the ELRC, and I think some honourable members said that we must stop squatting, and we've taken that seriously. Council also was of the view that we should, you know, move into our own premises. So here the proud announcement that we have is that council has taken a decision now to buy its own premises, its funds allow it, and in all probability it will be in central Pretoria. And the rationale for that has been that it must be somewhere where there is easy access for our educators to get to, because our educators prefer the physical way of dealing with the council rather than the emails and the telephone calls. So we tried to make that our priority, which guided that choice. It's an old building that will have to be redone. But in saying that, Chair, we want to officially place on record, before I finish off, our gratitude to the ELRC. Time does not permit, allow me to explain to the portfolio committee the generosity of the ELRC and the Department of Education over the many years of taking existence. We have come of age today because of the support and the generosity. The secretariat, together with his staff and the council, have been always willing to accommodate the council, and sometimes even to their own disadvantage. At the moment, the ELRC is in quite a quandary because they need more space in terms of some of the projects, and quite likely to say that we may have to get out of this. And we are pleading with the ELRC to just give us a little more breathing space, and by the middle of next year or so, you know, we would be able to find our own premises, and I'm sure they would reconsider the usage of space. But the important point to make sure is our gratitude for the financial resources that they have sent to space and also the accommodation. Thank you, Chair. I'll hand over quickly to Mr. Mapindani, who will highlight some aspects of the strategic output and some parts of the finance, so members can have a chance to ask questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for the presentation. Because of time, I'll quickly highlight issues which I feel are important for us to take to the committee. I would like to indicate that our financial statements were audited, and the report, we got the unqualified audit report. But there are matters which need attention. The matters are on page 26 of the annual report. To me, only they indicated 1, 2, 3, 4 matters, of which 3 relate to one issue. That's broken up, or that one issue leads to the 3 elements of our weakness. The first one, they say we never take appropriate steps to collect revenue and receivables timely. And the second one, which is different from the group, the code of professional ethics, we never reviewed our code of professional ethics. That on its own, it happens. What the council does is that from time to time, cases differ as they come to the structure. They in time review or add to the code. But what the auditors were suggesting was, what we need to do is to go back to the educators. Since we say the code has been drafted by educators, we should have a program going back and get inputs from ordinary educators as to input the changes into the code, rather than the council using its own experience from the cases we come across and correct the code. So that's it's a receiving attention. Currently we are having workshops, information sessions with educators, whereby we collect the input so that we can amend the code accordingly. So all these other three, including the first one which I've mentioned, they all involve around the database. What happens is that the issue of our database, since we started it in 1998, the format on its own could not match the current standard. And since the environment is dynamic and the information of indicators are dynamic, the current system could not take that into account. I'll give an example. Our system never gave us an opportunity to classify the subject specializations of our educators, like math teachers, science teachers. So that is a gap which, because we realize that as time goes on, these statistics are needed for planning purposes. So that's a gap which really we needed to fill. So this issue is being addressed. The CISA, being the State Information Technology Agency, is currently reviewing that database. They have constructed a new one, which on the 6th it will be tested if it complies to the set standard. So that's taken care of. So if that is addressed, all those other points except the one of the review of code of ethics will be covered. They'll be addressed accordingly. From the auditor's report, I will go to the balance sheet, which shows that I think it just confirmed what you all know, that although our mandate is so big, we
we are still small in terms of our revenue. It only shows that we have got assets of 6.9. That's what that balance sheet is showing. We are able to pay our obligations. If you can look at it, it shows that our obligations are less than a million, and we had assets, which our assets only fund an office equipment of 6.9. Then I'll move quickly to the income statement. Our income statement, when you look at it, I'll just highlight main elements. You'll realize that in terms of the code of conduct, the CEO has indicated the instability in that division and the number of cases which we dealt with that is related to the expenditure, which is just less than 200,000, which we spent. Although we never had money, but I would say we had little money because we had a table of 200,000. We should have used it if we had a stable department. When you look at professional development, I think we can still indicate that due to the financial constraints, we had to constrain our own operation, and the professional development is the one which is the key in this regard. We should have done more. So we spent that money because we never had resources. If you look at it, it's just half a million, and it's not convincing that a national institution like ourselves, in terms of professional development, we can do such performance. In terms of registration, it's almost close to half a million as well. I think that we performed successfully because we deal with applications which come, although we are still trying to locate if there are teachers who are practicing unregistered. As the CEO has indicated, currently we face the influx of foreign educators who are coming to the country to teach. In terms of staff costs, we saved a little bit because of some of the resignations which he highlighted. What we did because of the unchanged in terms of our funding, by that time the country had not taken a decision to fund six. Some of the positions we suspended them because we're not so sure what is the use of advertising position, whereas we're not so sure what those people will do when they come, because they don't have money, and year by year you are taking time. So we suspended that, taking the decision of the council, which I think became positive in February 2007. In short, we only saved 661,000 within the budget. Then I'll move to the performance against our objectives. In terms of registration, page 45 on the annual report and 46 on the annual report. In terms of registration, we managed to register just 22,499 educators who applied for registration. This includes the foreign educators. But by that time, we had less foreign educators. They started coming in this current financial year. In terms of the enforcement of the code, you might have seen that we, as it was indicated, we have attended to a few cases from the ones which were reported. The rest, we are having a system now to handle all of them and to deal with the backlog, which is not a big, it's not a huge backlog, but it's a backlog which accumulated in the previous financial year. What we are doing, we are training our own panelists to increase the number of panelists who will assist us in handling all these changes as they come. In terms of revenue, we managed to secure funding from council whereby they increased the contributions by its members from 24 rand per annum to 60 rand per annum, with effect from April 2007. Then in terms of professional development, we managed to conduct 7 PGP and IQM workshops in the provinces mentioned, Gauteng, Mpumalanga, Western Cape, and Free State. PDP is Professional Development Portfolio Program, and IQMS is Integrated Quality Management System. In terms of research, we produce 2 literature surveys on teacher shortages and relief and substitution of teachers. These are still internal, they are still being finalized by internal structures of cancer. Then, we, under research, we are researching on our own cases, the cases reported, to see if we can do something about the patterns, the nature of cases, the elements, so that we are able to address some serious issues which are wishing to be common in these cases. So that is a progress, that's work in progress which the council is trying to deal with to ensure that common elements within the teachers are addressed. We do have a system to try to address it with the teachers. I'll quickly jump to the promotion and enhancement of the image of the profession. We, as the CEO has indicated, we have, for last year, although it was not bigger than this year, we tried to communicate the message of World Teachers Day, and we had some advocacy, we improved our website, we also participated in the National Teacher Awards activities. So that's in short how the organization has performed. Lastly, I would like to say I would like to indicate the work in progress for the current year being the setting up of the CPTP system, which is continuing professional teacher development in terms of that framework which the CEO has indicated. And the acquisition of our building. Here I will say something because the ELRC idea, there is a currently there is a serious need of space from both ourselves and ELRC. And every time I was so sure that ELRC, kind as they were before, they may move out of the building and leave us there. But it seems that it is not easy that way. The other way is possible. Because they own the property we don't own, and we have been there, we never paid out the lease, really.
I think we don't know about that.
Okay.
We have a time constraint.
Okay. The last item is that advocacy campaigns, where we have to do advocacy campaigns to claim our good image, which nearly got lost because of lack of resources, and the database improvement, which I spoke about. So these are work in progress. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. I need some guidance. Now we have only 15 minutes for both. Remember, the sitting is starting at 12, which means we have to be asking their headquarters to not leave me. We need now to get guidance. I don't think I want guidance.
No,
I'll ask questions. I know we have thousand questions, but I'm worried about our time now. It's open to handle it.
Let's decide to have another meeting only for questions. We adjourn now, and then next time we can.
Yeah.
500. One person, are you going to guide me?
Chairperson, unfortunately, I have to agree with Bunam, Honorable Bunam, that really we may be given 1 minute, fine, but I don't think we'll be able to give justice to this. I also have more than 50 questions that I want to ask. So I would like to really suggest that we call them back specifically to deal with this question so we do a thorough job.
I'm just agreeing to that type. Let's just spend this 5-15 minutes there for asking some questions. Maybe they are more active than others. Can we be fair, therefore, and allow each one of us to ask two questions, not more, and spread the heat now, for now? Mm-hmm. Abam Kim.
Firstly, let me assure them that the question of giving professional development to Spain is very much welcomed by the Portugal police. We have already explained our appreciation to the department to the fact that at long last, you know, the question of professional development should happen in the country, which is in line with professionalization. We also welcome your conceptualization of professionalism within one program, especially the fact that now we move from the previous breakdown. Professional development is not something done to us, but it's something done with or which is done by 600 professionals. And I think this is very, very good. What is of concern is the fact that it is not highlighted, you know, the challenge around the I2MS, which is also responsible for professional development, and that seems to be contradicting the whole issue of safety. So I don't know how to put that. But also the state of readiness for safety to implementation will be very pleased to hear that. Now that is also linked to the LR, right? Two issues. We shall join them together. You said that you're responsible for the facilitation and monitoring of the I2MS. Anecdotal evidence suggests that now the implementation of it is very problematic, especially achieving the two goals, professional development and accountability. It seems the tendency is to focus on accountability, especially with the view of just getting a notch. Because the main thing is conceptual lines, you know. Two contradictory simple things in one. I want to get from your own experience, you find that the I2MS is really possible to achieve the two goals. And then also, that is also linked with the question of I2MS, the professional priority and yourself and the department, how to deal with that kind of issue. And then now, you have said permanent appointment of temporary teachers. Is there no framework for the appointment of teachers? How does it come about that now you should come in and be a facilitator so that teachers are being appointed? Where does temporary come in? If you can get clarity, because they have to deal with the conflict. Is a managerial issue or simply flouting the regulation, then it becomes unacceptable. You can get clarity on that. It is also linked with dispute resolution. You say 589 issues, and 50 of them are around appointment and promotion. It's a matter of concern. So if you can get clarity, what is right with this issue? And especially now, our 169 is
Pavandu.
Thank you, Chair. I'll limit myself just one question. I'm referring to this CPG very quickly. I said, of course, very well. The unions have been talking about this thing for the past 10 years. What worries me, you know, everybody talks about alignment. But you know what? Government. But if the whole thing keeps missing to me, I do not understand where would the alignment be. Because if these things are not nicely defined and spoken, there's a danger of participation in the waste of money. Number two, there's also this issue where good of CPD, you know, the notice of giving us, it would be incentive very wonderful. No punitive measure. Now, if after 10 years of union talking about this, we have been pleading with Peter since in an information age, driven by the global thinking. Globalization is not a thing of the past. It's new to us because we have just woken up 18 years ago. The whole generation of globalization. And if we've got to catch up with the rest of the world, because that teacher, they must keep on reinventing themselves, learning, and so on. So the concept here of making it non-unity, the physical context. Well, maybe punitive, we could take a variety of things, freezing, you know, increments and things like that. Because there is a 3-year cycle, we're not talking about 1 year. The kids have got 3 solid years to make some movements. And these 150 points, you know, the way I conceptualize them, they are not really demanding. Can I get that into what is the
thanks, Chairperson. To ELRC, on the material weaknesses that were highlighted on your audit report regarding the fixed assets, the major issue was lack of evidence of physical count. So I just want to know as to whether, if there was no evidence of physical count, how accurate then was your fixed asset register if you do have it. And looking at your depreciation there, it's fluctuating 2005, 2006, and 2017, those years. How does the fixed asset register affect this, and how sure are you then that this is a true reflection, this depreciation has been calculated correctly if the fixed asset register is not updated? Because if there's no physical evidence, then it's not updated. Then depreciation is questionable. Chairperson, again on the Research and Development Fund from ELRC, I see there is a significant decrease there from 2006-2007, from around 6 million to 2 million. Are we saying research and development is no longer important, because as an institution that is aiming for excellence, we have to look at continuous improvement, and you cannot improve continuously if you don't engage in research and development. How do we justify this significant cut? And then to say just a short one, I see you are doing some research as well. You said it's internal. And when I look at your schedule of expenditure, you have not disclosed it as an expenditure research, unless I have missed it. Don't you incur any expenses? What kind of research are you doing? Thank you, Chair.
No problem.
Thank you, Chair. If you visit the people you work with and you read also the people you service, then you will always be propelled to actually improve the capacity of those people so that they can be better workers or better lives. Now, my question here is to the ELRC. Although you seem to be overlapping in your mandate, perhaps even the state can answer it. What is and has the ELRC done to capacitate educators in order to help them to meet the higher standards of performance? And in particular, to close the glaring chasm in our education created by the dire shortage of math and science educators. And the other question is, educators who come from foreign countries are employed here. Now, do you find them are treating them well as far as the national curriculum statement is concerned? Or do they have to undergo some kind of training before they are employed? The other question is here, it's not a question, it's rather a comment. That clearly 312 complainants are left frustrated and disillusioned due to state failure to deal with their complaints. And I can't see any justification for attending only 9 complaints out of over 300 per annum. And this would actually say to teachers that we are not being taken seriously as professionals. The IQMS has been answered, and this one also has been tackled. Now, the dispute. There were disputes that were actually withdrawn due to lack of jurisdiction. Now, I need clarification on that score as to how can the dispute lack of jurisdiction to extend that they are thrown out of the window. Thank you.
To the ELRC and the Ministry of Presidents, is this your first qualifier? And to say, the registration with the state appears to be optional, am I right? It is not optional, but very difficult to enforce. I was going to ask a question as to whether there would be a problem if, you know, there could be some measure of enforcement. And I also want to pose this question also to the ELRC. Would there be any fundamental, you know, what you call it, a violation of teachers' rights? That's what should be done.
I think that covers everything. And maybe that is put on the case by that is discussed with the state. They as a committee, last time we invited this well, because they were in Rwanda in some 5 years ago, and lost it with Russia. Maybe there could be some comment on that one. Again, while things are well on the ground, I'm very frustrated in my constituency. Every week there is a moratorium, school closed again. I don't know if that is paid 2 years. I don't know where that belongs, ethically, morally, and otherwise. I allow you to respond to this in parallel to this, please. You have to
say? I think if we look at the issue of the rights, I think if there's a law that requires all educators to be members of a professional body, then that's not a violation of the rights. The need to become members and uphold the ethical and professional standards that is required. And that is something we definitely do. So there's no violation of the right. It just may be how the ethical standards apply and what criminal sanctions arise. It's always people always want to appeal, whether they go to the ELRC, the Labour Court or High Court, but they always want to appeal a sanction. But notwithstanding that, there's no other violation. In respect of jurisdiction of dispute, well, not every dispute is a dispute. You cannot bring a matter to the ELRC which is not envisaged in the Labor Relations Act.
it must either relate to dismissal or to an unfair labor practice within the definition of Section 186 of the Labor Relations Act. So it must relate to promotion. It can't relate to transfer. Okay? That's not defined in the Act. So that's how we determine whether we have jurisdiction or not. The CCMA screens out 40% of cases to jurisdiction just by screening the referral form. So we have educators and unions who sometimes declare disputes when we do not have jurisdiction to deal with. So that's generally how what we mean by jurisdiction. And then sometimes it slips out, and then the arbitrator must also look and establish whether we have jurisdiction. They just cannot handle a case because we refer it to them. They must establish their jurisdiction. Honorable member from the DA. So that's generally what jurisdiction would apply to. In respect of the qualification, this is the first qualification that we've ever had, but it does not relate to, in a material sense, that's what the auditor agenda has in points 9 and 10, in respect of this. It relates to compliance with IAS standard 39, which requires a discounting. Now, other auditors may have went and ensured that adjustment was made. In our case, the Auditor General, who audits us, not only does a financial audit, also does a performance audit. So, to that extent, it's nothing to be too perturbed about. Save that we must not repeat it next year, that is, we comply with IAS standards 39, I think yesterday was said further to say what other measures we need. The problem has been with national treasury, who did not keep us abreast of the latest standards that apply, given that we were changing from grant to grant, generally recognized accounting practice. So national treasury itself has intercepted some liability. But saying that, we have met and complied with the standards. The question relates then to close to fixed assets. We do have a system. In 2002, we purchased a barcoding system, and we have updated our assets register. The initial question in 2003 was the depreciation, but you will realize that in the last financial year, the requirement for depreciation changed significantly, and that therefore has an impact. And there has to be, Jeff will talk about the land and values and buildings, especially in those. But we do have...
We'll talk about it tomorrow.
Okay. The last part. The linkages between faith, the ERC, I think when it comes, there needs to be a greater linkage between faith, the ERC, and the CETA, to the extent that each has a distinct role to play, and one needs to support the other. In the ERC, our mandate would be to ensure that where it requires a matter of negotiation or consultation, that is achieved. To the extent then what is then managed and attended to for professional development would not be impeded in any way by the system structure. So that is where I think the level of cooperation needs to be, but sadly does not take place in any uniform manner. And so that itself may lead to a variety of approaches. In IQMS, the bottom line is that we conducted research entitled Workloads of Educators, conducted by Dr. Linda Chisholm of the Human Sciences Research Council. One of its findings was that the introduction of IQMS was problematic and that we needed to revise it to a significant extent. We are hoping that in the proposals that will come from either the state or the educator union, that they would address the weaknesses. That does not mean IQMS must be replaced. But there is a problem that you could not implement IQMS properly because the professional development aspect, the provincial departments were not paying any attention to. They did not have clear plans in place on what programs they would offer two educators who are found wanting. There's a development aspect to our journey, and there's an accountability. And as you rightfully put it, it would become a concern if everybody just got the 1%, which the minister was complaining about, and there was no improvement in the result. Secondly, if areas were identified, then clearly the employers at the provincial department would have had to ensure the educators undertook some development exercise, which was lacking. And so,
thank you very much. I will speak about the state of readiness of states to address CPTD system. We have a meeting with the National Department of Education every 2 weeks or so. It's a joint task team of states and the national departments, and we are very carefully going through a design so that in fact it's carefully worked out. We're at the stage now where from time to time we hold meetings with various stakeholders at which we present it. And it's probably it would be a good idea if we had another meeting whenever we do meet with this committee again for us to do a short presentation on CPTD, because you've asked many questions and it's a very complex thing really. It's such a new thing and a big thing that to do justice to it now is not possible. But if I could briefly refer to the incentive aspect and what will happen after 10 years if the people still resist it. Well, we do believe there is support from teachers at present for this. We've also learned from international experience where councils such as our council, professional councils, have imposed this with rigorous punishment, particularly in teaching circumstances, that in fact the teachers have just rebelled completely. And it won't work. The compulsion won't work in our country at present. So we work on the incentives that if you are up to date with your registration and you're up to date with your points, you get an advanced registration or some title that makes you a more qualified teacher. So when you go for promotion appointments, then you would say, I'm an advanced teacher. And that would incentivize them to reach these higher levels. So the people who are motivated would keep at it. It doesn't mean that for 10 years we're never going to get to the point. But we right now have a shortage of teachers. If we were to deregister everybody who didn't make it in the first 3 years, we wouldn't really be able to deal with that crisis that we would be creating, because you have to be registered in order to be employed in any school. And that's working in the state sector, but perhaps not in the independent sector so well. So there are incentives, but it doesn't mean forever teachers won't have to account. We do support it. The professor here was very passionate about this, so we'll let her have an input.
Let us not have one sitting here again, please. Let's move on to another person. It's almost 5 for now. We have to go
All right. Okay. It's unfortunate that we are rushing. The research, the finance can speak about the research for what actually not done with additional expense. Maurice, you want to answer on the research? All right. Okay. Rich, would you like to deal with the...
Let me just take a few quick. The question of developing teachers, it's not state's role to develop teachers. There is an important difference. Our role is to see to the development of teachers, to watch over. So we are not a kind of a provider, but more of a referee. And the question of foreign teachers coming and teaching here, the question has been raised in our interdepartmental meetings as well, whether foreigners should also be given some kind of test and to check whether they are appropriately qualified to teach in our schools. Although we do get the qualifications are short, but the topic has come up now, maybe it's time to go that way. Totally correct, the number of cases that are processed have been too few, and the explanation has been given, but it is true, we want to agree, unacceptable law. For enforcing state registration is an important topic, share. It's not that our teachers are reluctant to register. I can't remember a single case of a teacher saying, I will not register, would say, see what you can do about it. No. The problem has been largely not knowing that they have to be registered, misunderstanding, because they see it on the pay slip and they regard themselves as being registered and so on. And I think the outreach, together with some arrangements with the department, will be able to fix that.
The question of school closing at 10 o'clock, Chair, I think is a matter that we want to see communication about. We need to speak to the school principal, because at the end of the day, the school principal is the one that decides on the opening and the closure of that school. So I think that school principal is going to have a problem with saying, while of course the employer will also want to do something about that, but I don't think the council is going to sit back and say it's professional that the headmaster can decide to close school at 10. I don't know, CD and Professor Giam is going to make one or two closing comments, Chair, please, I brought them too far.
Thank you. I just wanted to respond to Slavantu. He's saying, how are we going to do this when unions have failed? There's a legacy that we are left with, and that is that many people crash land in the city, and they are the ones who are running the unions there. Some of them, and we have to be fair here, who were never taken through what is required to become professional. And one of the things is professional development, continuing professional development, which is like the third leg when you're already working. But if you haven't gone through soul searching, which is the first step, do I sit into this? And if you have crashed, you have to get up and say, where am I? Do I have one? To be here, then we're still going to have a problem. And professional development cannot be punitive because you want to be on top of it. And therefore we need to do advocates to make teachers realize that they need to keep abreast, they need to keep on top, they need to do it because they need to do it.
Can I make a proposal of our week one? I know we're closing shop for under 10. We're wanting to come. So I think what we're going to be doing is to, if there are any questions of our size, we're going to send those the same questions so that we get them the same responses, so that we're going to share it. If members have each question, they can exactly go down. We're going to cut them into one, send them, and we get the responses. Thank you. I'm sorry for having pushed you the way I have, but to thank you, I think that's better than saying don't come at all. We have to hear it.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. And I'm told, because we thought we'd be here till 1, whoever is going to be around here at 1, come back at my station.
David, sit down.